Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and it's a return to wrestling today. I've got Kia Stevens, AEW's Awesome Kong, or maybe you know her as the Welfare Queen on the Netflix hit series Glow, or maybe you remember her as Karma from WWE. Well, big deal. The bottom line is she's a big deal. And Kia is here today. She's talking about everything wrestling, how and why she started her wrestling career in Japan with All Japan Women, her run at TNA, tagging with the great Gail Kim, and beating up the great Gail Kim. Some of the best matches in that company's history were between the two of them. Her jump to WWE and the debut of Karma and why it was a very short run, landing the role of the Welfare Queen on Glow and what eventually brought her to AEW. And here's something, Kia also suffers from caulophobia, a legit fear of clowns. No kidding. Wait till you hear some of her stories about that. Lots of cool stuff from Kia. Here she is, Awesome Kong, making her Talk as Jericho debut right here, right now.
Is it Kia Stevens or Kaya?
It's Kia.
Kia.
Like the car.
Oh, like Kia, like the car.
But not as cheap, you know. A little more classy.
Yeah, you know, you're much more classier than that.
But we have Kia Stevens is here, and I'm so excited because with AEW starting out and not really knowing who's on the show and who's not on the show, and basically just kind of showing up to see who's there, and I see you walking around. I'm like, oh, that's great. They got Awesome Kong here. And of course, too, it's extra special for me because we've never really met too much.
No.
I don't think we've ever really met until AEW, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, yep. But I'm also a fan of you from Glow, which is great.
Jericho watched me on the telly.
I did. The Welfare Queen. I love it. But I mean, so much to talk about, but let's start off with Glow and just saying how much of a success it is. And I know you guys... season 3 just came out recently.
Yeah.
Now, were you acting for a while before you got that part, or how did you kind of get cast in that?
Well, you know, I started off in acting as a kid.
Oh, okay.
So,
where are you from?
I'm from Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I grew up with a stage mom. She was an actress as well.
Okay.
And you know, Brian Wittenstein, who's deep in wrestling, he was an agent at the time in L.A., mm-hmm. and he knew of my acting background and called me and said, you know, they're doing a Glow show. They're, you know, making it into a comedy. There's a part in there. I think you should go out for it. And I was in Florida at the time, so I auditioned via tape, and I auditioned for Cherry, actually. And they didn't think I was right for Cherry, but they loved what they saw in the tape, so they asked me to go out for Tamae, Welfare Queen, and then got cast from there.
And it's hard to do auditions on tape, too.
It is, especially since I was so busy. I was actually on my way to Japan. So I was like in the airport doing lines and stuff. And it was rolling around on the ground. And it's like, in one part, they were like, you gotta roll on the ground. I'm rolling around on the ground in the Tokyo airport.
But it's great because, like I said, like, 'cause you're one of the cast members, maybe the only cast member that actually is in the wrestling business.
Mm-hmm. Outside of Chavo, yeah.
You ever see Chavo, right? Yeah, Chavo's kind of the trainer for all of you guys. And Chavo's been on before. We've had a couple of the girls on.
Yeah. He's done an episode or two.
See, like Carlito, I saw him in there and a couple of others. But did that help you kind of knowing a little bit about the business? Or did you kind of have to put yourself in the mindset of all the other people that are learning at the same time as you?
A little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Glow itself was like in a world of its own.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that those women experienced in wrestling was a little bit different, not as parallel as to what other wrestlers experienced going on the road and whatnot, you know. So a little bit of both.
Because even just from a training standpoint, right? Because the idea is you guys on Glow are all amateur, just actresses or whatever, people trying to get a part on this show.
Yes.
So you can't come in there and be taking, you know, Awesome Kong type bumps because your character shouldn't be doing that.
Exactly. It was hard to strip it down back to basics. It was one scene like the director had to get next to me and say, we just want it a little bit more messier, because it was like I was taking these three-quarter rolls and they just hopping up like, yeah. They're like, no, just a little more.
You
you were a kid, just
you had to untrain yourself in a lot of ways,
myself,
right?
Yeah.
How was it watching? Like, did you help train the girls?
Yeah, mm-hmm. We got you know, would take half the class aside if they hadn't been there for a while and catch them up with what we had done for a few days, mm-hmm. or just Chavo would refer to me, like, kind of like have me co-sign on things, like, right? I'm like, right, yeah, mm-hmm. you know, you could also try it this way or that way, being that a female, sometimes we do things just a little bit different than a man,
mm-hmm.
just a little bit, like, you know, how we might grab a crotch or whatnot,
right?
You know, as an example.
It's interesting, too, because if you're talking about, you know, the whole concept of GLOW, and I'm assuming, obviously, you're too young to have watched it.
No, I did.
Oh, you did watch it?
Oh, totally. Okay. Are you kidding me? My brother and I would sit there, and we dreamt of, like, taking on Hollywood and Vine. Like, that was, like, the deal for us. I actually asked Santa Claus to make me a GLOW girl when I grew up.
No kidding.
And then, like, before the next Christmas even rolled around, the show, I got canceled, and I was like, what?
Oh, man.
Santa, what? Santa's not real, but he is real. It took him a while.
Yeah, but he did it, though.
But he did it,
though. Yeah, that's incredible. That's so cool to hear that. Because, you know, like I said, like, I used to watch GLOW as well, and it was fun because I watched every type of wrestling. So if it was wrestling, I was into it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, you know, campy and fun. But the fact I love when the show came out, because it's got so much more drama, and it's really, I mean, it was such a huge hit. Did you expect that, or what did you guys think about it?
No, I mean, it's even now, it's different for me because I'm on the inside looking out.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when I'm driving down the street and I see the big billboard on the side of the building, I'm like, oh my gosh. Or if I have my hair more like Tammy's and people recognize me in the store and mark out not for wrestling, but for something on TV, that's a newer experience for me. So it's like,
yeah, because you're a legit actress on a legit hit show.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah. It's really cool.
So, and how do you think it, like, it's interesting to me that you can binge watch the whole season. So different from the way things used to be.
I know.
Right?
Like, but you guys have it easier because when we're shooting, we get the script, like, weekly.
Hmm.
So we'll read it and have to wait, like, a whole other week to know what's going to happen next. And I'm like, I kind of want to know. This is so juicy. I want to know what's going on.
And also, too, you're always kind of scared, like, if I'm going to be on next week.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, am I going to be in? Are you going to see me?
But it's funny, too, because it's like, I was thinking about that. I was watching Stranger Things. I haven't gotten to GLOW yet, season 3. But you spend, I don't know, 6 months making it.
Mm-hmm.
And then people can watch it all, like, in 6 days. And then it's like,
or less.
It's, yeah.
If you have an afternoon free, because it's only like 5.5 hours.
Basically, yeah, right? Is it 10 hours. Episodes?
Yeah, 10 episodes, 30 minutes, so 6 hours.
Yeah. So then you could be done, and then it's like, okay, what's next? You know, it's like,
it's done.
You gotta wait, guys.
Give me more.
Who do you like working with as far as your other characters that are just some of your favorites to do scenes with?
Well, we're almost like one organism, mm-hmm. the girls. I mean, it's pandemonium when we're all on set. If it's like all of us in a scene,
mm-hmm.
it is pandemonium. Because, I mean, we are, it's like having a sleepover. Going to work and having a sleepover every day because it's just so much fun. And we giggle. And we speak every day. We're in contact constantly, even if we're not in production. And it's just so much fun to have, like, you know, 12 sisters to gaggle with all day long, to the point where, like, the crew's like, okay, we want to go home, so you guys need to quiet, get it together,
right,
and say your lies, all this chit-chat and laughing and stuff.
How is it for you to do, like, the red carpets and all that stuff? You guys, were you up for an Emmy, I think it was, or?
Yeah, the show's been up for an Emmy. This year, we got nominated for 4. Congrats to Betty Gilpin for her nom for Best Supporting Actress. We got nominated for a bunch of SAG awards, and that is surreal when you're on the red carpet and then, like, your favorite stars, like, you know, are just right, like Robert De Niro's, like, right there. I'm like, oh my God, Bobby D is right there.
I am in GLOW. But it's kind of different, though. You've acted, but you've never been anything at this level before.
No, no, I've only experienced it from, like, afar. Like, my mother did a movie with Americana from back in the day, Cindy. She played Americana on the original GLOW.
Oh.
And she took us to the set, and we got to meet her.
Wow.
And it was like, insane. And actually, after the first season, because, you know, we don't have any pictures. My mom has passed. We don't have any pictures of her, really, because we've had a few fires and perished.
Yeah.
Cindy reached out to me after the first season, and we met for lunch, and she gave me a bunch of pictures of my mom on set. And coincidentally, we have the exact same haircut. She has the exact same haircut in those pictures as Tammy has. We look exactly the same. And it was just like, oh my. Even the drink, because it was in the 80s.
Sure.
She's wearing like the same stuff that Tammy wears and everything. And it was like, oh wow.
That's so cool, though. I mean, we'll talk about, you know, it was meant to be type mm-hmm. of thing, right?
Kismet.
Yeah,
Providence.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, a couple of happenstance.
I'm out.
We're out. We're done. That's all we got. You threw Providence out there. I wouldn't have got that one. I was going to ask you about more of the glow stuff. When you're talking about, like I said, with your mom and the pictures of your mom and all that sort of stuff, I mean, obviously she'd probably be very proud of you that you were at this level.
Proud, but she probably would have already found a way to ingratiate herself onto the show. For sure.
A 60-year-old stage mom.
Yes. Like, seriously. It was that kind of person.
What did you, like I said, I haven't seen season 3 yet. So what happens to Tammy in this season?
This season, Tammy experiences, we finally get to what wrestling does to your body.
Mm.
And she experiences, because, you know, we're in Vegas and we're doing show after show after show.
Is that what happens? The whole crew moves and you get like a residency or something?
Yes. At a hotel or yes. So the show is a fixed show and we're doing the same show every night. And because, you know, she's a bigger girl, so she's basing, that's bringing some wear and tear on her back. And she's in denial, or at least doesn't want to share exactly what it's doing to her. So she's taking all kind of avenues to hide that injury.
Okay.
Until she can't anymore.
Just like you really would in wrestling.
Just like you really would in wrestling.
Mm. That's actually a pretty good idea. I wonder why somebody doesn't do that, like a residency wrestling show.
I know, right?
You know, like a Vegas version of it.
I'd go.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of what WOW does, maybe. Sort of thing. So let's talk about how you ended up in AEW, because like I said, when you were filming Glow, I didn't know if you were taking a break from wrestling or if you had finished wrestling, but here you are. You had.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't stepped before Las Vegas. I hadn't stepped into a ring in that kind of capacity in over 3 years.
Mm.
So I didn't even know if Kong was going to show up that night, because, like, you know, she's like a whole psyche in my head. I was like, girl.
Interesting. Okay. So Awesome Kong is a character, like, I was here, you know, like Alice Cooper. He becomes Alice before he goes on stage.
Exactly.
You know? So you didn't know if you would still be able to find that.
I didn't know. Like, it for like nights and nights upon nights beforehand, I would like be in bed and be like, argh,
mm.
And I was like, I don't know if that's what she did back then. I had to like study myself. And it really wasn't until the music hit that I even slipped into that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually kind of panicky. But Dallas Diamond Page gave me like this incredible pep talk.
As he always does.
Right?
What did he tell you?
He was like, have you read my book? It's The Power of Positive Thinking.
It's available on Amazon.
That's what he said. And I bought it like right then and there. And he was like, you can do it. You've been doing this. Your experience. Go out there. They're going to love you.
Mm.
Positive thinking. Hey, afterwards, come and talk to me. We'll talk more about my book.
But I mean, you know, it's interesting because, and this is something that I think performers will all understand is, and fans probably don't, like people would say to me sometimes, like when I was doing the listing, hey, can you put me on the list? It's like, no, because I'm not that guy when I'm standing here on the street, because there's a certain tone to it and there's an attitude to it or anything that you do, like going up to a comedian, say, tell that funny joke that you tell. And I think once you put kind of your armor on, your ring gear, and then that's why ring music is so important. You really have to feel it, because if you don't, it's not going to pull the switch.
It's not, yeah.
Right?
And it is the switch.
Yeah.
There was one time in TNA, Gail and I, we were doing a match and Kong hadn't showed up. And I mean, I freaked out as kid. I was like, oh my God. And Jeff Jarrett just happened to be right next to me. He's like, what's going on? I was like, Kong's not here. And he just didn't get it. Mm-hmm. He was like, what are you talking about? You're standing right here. I was like, no, you don't understand. She's not effing here. And even when the music hit, it felt like I was an imposter. And I was like, please. Mm. And then it wasn't until like the very first move and I spilled out onto the floor and I took that bump and it was like, okay, she's here. Okay, great. And that had never happened to me before and it has happened since. But I mean, when I say panic, because I was like, I don't know if I'm just going to be like, oh, see, scratch you on your everywhere, gal. Because that's Kia, you know.
Right.
That's not Kong. Kong and Kia are polar opposites. In fact, it took a while for my cousins and my uncles to understand that, you know, because I grew up in LA, they're in like the Midwest, that I was the daughter that was wrestling. So they all thought it was my sister when they heard, oh, Phyllis's daughter is wrestling. They're like, oh, Sean. They're like, no, Kia. Well, no, because Kia's like the mute one that doesn't, the shy one that doesn't say anything. They're like, no, that's the one that's wrestling. And no one could believe it because I was so very shy. When my mom would take me on auditions and things, like, I'd whisper the words. I'd be really shy. And then we'd get in the car, and then I'd say it, you know, like, with gusto. She's like, why couldn't you do that in the room? I'm like, because there were other people there, not just you.
Right.
But, yeah.
That could come from, I think, is maybe from your early acting background or whatever, where you have to drop into the character, you know, which is what actors do.
Yes. That right. took me a long time to develop. So I was a painfully shy kid. I didn't want to do acting. That was something my mom pushed us into. I was like, I would just rather just be in the corner. I'm very, very, very shy. And it took me years, took me to about high school to break out of that.
You know, I like hearing the story because, like I said, we hadn't really met before. And I had the same thing, especially I'd say 10 years ago when I was doing the suit and tie Jericho and just dropping in, like just being like a legit hated heel where people would attack me on the street and that sort of thing. Just dropping into it and coming out of the ring and not being able to get out of it quickly. I'd have to go sometimes and stand in a corner to come out of this Jericho asshole kind of character. Did you have to do that sometimes as Kong?
Not often, but I can pin a moment or two. Yeah. Because, you know, what happens like right afterwards or during a match sometimes. After a match, you know, you get together and
you talk
review
about
and what you whatnot. Did, yeah. And yeah, there's been a couple of times where it's like, oh, that's not what Key would say. That's something Kong would emote.
Right, I'm gonna go stand in the corner and let it come back to life here. That's what you say. So you didn't know in Vegas if you would be able to find Kong. She was there, but how did you end up coming to AEW in the first place?
I got a call again.
That's simple.
Brian Wittenstein said, "Hey, you know, Brandy and Cody are interested in bringing you in for X, Y, and Z." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "Well, okay, yes, let's do it. Easy as pie."
Right.
Let's. What do you think, Brandy? Because Brandy and I go back from WWE, and it was like, for Brandy, I didn't even really understand the magnitude of it because I haven't been in wrestling, so I didn't know what was going on in wrestling. But if my girl calls, she need me, hey, showing up.
And of course, you have to say it just like that. I'm sure you probably were thinking at first, like you said, it's probably just an indie show or whatever it may be, or. You didn't realize, just like you said, the magnitude of like a national television show run by a multi-billionaire family.
Really didn't. Actually, when they did the thing in Chicago, the first All In, so they had the star cast, that signing thing, and I happened to be there. And then I kept hearing them say, you know, everybody's gone to the show. And I just assumed it was an indie show.
Right.
And I was like, well, then I'm going to take some of my photographs and get over to this indie show and get me a table in the corner and make some more extra cash. And then I had my friend take me to the building, and it was the freaking Sears building. And I was like, wait, what? We had trouble getting in because there was, like, security. And then I walked in, and I saw the production value. I was like, I don't think they're going to let me set up a table up here.
That's great. You're probably thinking, like, where's the community center next door to the Sears Center?
where's the VA hole?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow. And that's the thing. It was good to see because, once again, I was a big fan of, you mentioned Gail. There was a time in Impact and TNA at the time where you guys were the highlights of the show.
Yeah.
Every week for, I don't know, months and months and months, you and Gail, and you can fill me in some of the other girls too, but it was a real magical time for you guys in TNA.
Yes, it was. Yeah, there was a time where, like, the girls' segments were the
highest rated
segments in the show, and that was like, yeah.
Just having that chemistry with Gail.
I mean, because Gail is a professional. She cares about the product because, you know, Gail don't have to wrestle. Mm-hmm. She don't have to wrestle. That's not her bread and butter. But mm-hmm. she loves this business, you know, to the point where, oh, she's inspired. Like, I wrestled as hard or that hard because I did not want to let this woman down. Because, I mean, it meant, you could just see it. It's like, dang, yes, I want some of that. Mm-hmm. I want to feel like that. And that, I think that's where that chemistry came from.
It was also a great pairing of, you know, the smaller baby face and the big monster heel. It's the easiest story in the book, right?
Yeah, and she's a spitfire. And the things that, you know, Dutch Mantel had a lot to do with that, putting those storylines together and stuff. And it just was like the perfect storm at the perfect time. Mm-hmm. And it let me get out of my head a bit because I was going through, that's the time when my mom came down with cancer and she was dying. And if I wasn't wrestling, I was taking care of her. So being in the ring was like an outlet.
It was your therapy.
Yes, it really was. Really needed it.
Was that your first like major company or had you been working for a while like in indies and stuff?
That was my first major company in the U.S. because I did stuff in Japan. I had been working in Japan for 7-8 years prior to that and was, you know, top dog over there, making great money and just yay. And I had only really came home because, you know, I had my mom to take care of and I was missing my nieces and nephews grow up. And, like, the Lord was like, girl, it's time just to come home real quick. So I said, okay. So I thought I would only stay in Japan for a couple of years. That was the plan. Stay in Japan for a couple of years, build up something, come back to the United States, go out for WWE. Mm-hmm. That was the plan. But the money was so good in Japan, I stayed longer. I liked it. And when I got back to the United States, I went to ROH and Shimmer immediately. And then TNA, that opportunity came up, and it was this something new, and they were like, building something, and I, you know, bought the whole deal, hook, line, and sinker. And I was like, yeah, okay, this is where I want to be right now. And I think it went the way it was supposed to.
When you talk about Japan, so what company was it that you were there?
All Japan Women.
All Japan Women. That's obviously very prestigious. So many great performers over the years from there. So you started basically in Japan then?
Yes, I took my very first bump at the School of Hard Knocks in San Bernardino with Jesse Hernandez.
Oh,
and, right?
I was
Jesse?
There. I went there like 1991 or something for a training session.
Yeah, so you know, yeah, Jesse. Yeah, yeah. And then 8 weeks later, well, I had, I was on this reality series called Discovery Health Body Challenge, and it's kind of like The Biggest Loser.
Okay.
But this is way before The Biggest Loser, right. 10 years before The Biggest Loser.
Like a weight loss show or something?
Yes, because I had went out for Tough Enough. I don't know if you know that. Mm-hmm. I drove out to Las Vegas for Tough Enough, and I stood in that line, and I was actually right behind Kenny King. Kenny King and I stood in line all day long together. And I stood in that line all day long, and then I finally got into that ring, and I cut my little promo that I've been practicing all weekend long, and then I did the little nip-up that they told us we had to do, and then I stood there all proud of myself, and JR was like, next, and I was like, wait, hold up, what? And he was like, yeah, next, and I was like, no, I didn't drove X, Y, and Z, I didn't call it out of work, I didn't spend my last money on this expensive room at Caesar's Palace, you gonna ask me some questions. And then he was like, oh, you want me to ask you some questions? He was like, well, I'm sorry, I think you're just too big to ever accomplish anything in wrestling, you'll never accomplish anything in wrestling.
Too big as in you were too fast or whatever the word
was. Yeah, and I was like 100 pounds lighter than I am now.
Really?
Oh, my God. I was barely like 195, 185, 195.
But too big. I mean, that's the point.
Yeah.
You're a monster heel.
Never achieve anything or else. I was like, okay.
Wow.
Watch this. And I'm so glad he said it.
Yeah.
If he had not said that, I wouldn't be where I am today.
What motivated you?
Oh, like a mug. It was like, oh, okay. You know, this person that I look, you know, never meet y'all heroes, y'all. But thank God he did, because it put a fire up under me to do it, and it put me on a path to like prove this person wrong.
Mm.
And fast forward like 10 years later, JR is the one who lobbied and helped me get into WWE.
Mm. Did he remind him what he had said?
Oh, of course. Are you kidding me? Of course. That thing burning in my belly like a lump of coal straight out of Mordor. Yes, I had to remind that man what he said.
So that made you inspired you to go on the weight loss show then.
Mm-hmm.
And then you lost some weight.
And I lost some weight. And then they had arranged, they knew my goal was to be a wrestler. They arranged for me to go to a wrestling school, which was School of Hard Knocks with Jesse. And then 8 weeks later, after I took my first bump, 8 weeks later, they had surprised me with Joni over there as she was working out over at the New Japan Dojo.
China.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when we had that interaction, the Inoki said, you know, anytime you want to come over and train, please do. And barely 2 weeks had passed by, they called me and said, there's a promoter here from All Japan Women's that wants to look at some folks. And I went, and because I was so green and brand new, all I really knew I'd do was run the ropes and take a bump and throw a clothesline. And I was big and black and formidable. They wanted to bring me over so that they could build me up their own way. You know what I mean? They could teach me, you know, mold me the way they wanted to. So that was, you know, fortuitous as well.
Well, like you said, too, and this is something that I've been in Japan, I think almost 60 times. There's no black people there. So if you're blonde, they can make themselves blonde, that canary blonde dye job, but a big black lady, let's be honest, that's something that would scare people, and you can play that part so well. So it's actually very smart for them to do that.
Right. Well, also, Aja Kong had just left their company, and they had a big show coming up at Kawasaki. And the card read, you know, A Kong versus Hoda Yumiko. And so... So, of course, they were like, well, we're not changing the card and giving no tickets back. So we're just going to name you A Kong.
Do you know how much it costs for these posters? We need a Kong one way or another.
We need a Kong one way or another. You are it. So, yeah, that's and it's crazy because they didn't tell me that they named me Kong at all. So one day I go to training at Inoki Dojo and Shinsuke Nakamura comes up to me and calls me Kong. And I damn near kicked him in the nuts because I was like, I don't care where you from. You just don't come up and call black people Kong. I mean, you just don't do it. And so they had to
Big gorilla, are you kidding me?
Right? What are you? What? So they had to explain because it was some heat right there. They had to explain to me what had transpired in Japan that they had the press conference and it was in the back seat. And then, Lord, they had named me Kong.
Awesome Kong.
Yeah.
That's where it came from.
That's where it came
from. So who
from.
Did you work with mostly over there?
I worked, as far as people?
Yeah, because this is past, obviously, the Akira Hakuto era.
Yeah.
Emanami Toyota era.
I worked with Nanae Takahashi, Momo Nakanishi, Hota Yumiko, and then you got, you know, Toyota was, Manami was still wrestling.
She's amazing.
Yes. Oh, my God.
One of the best performers, male or female, ever.
Oh, gosh. She had an anniversary show one time, and she wrestled in every match.
Like 60 matches or something?
It was 12 matches. She wrestled in every match. And I mean, like, she didn't skimp on any of the matches either. And it was like a physical feat I had never seen before.
Yeah. It was such a great athlete. Plus, she had a great look. And
yes.
There was a whole crew of them at that time, from like Hakuto and Toyota. And I think Aja was in there too.
Mm-hmm. Bull Nakano,
right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, just I did a, what's called a tournament one time. And it was like, because of the way it was, I ended up doing 5 matches. And by the 5th match, I could barely race the ring. I could literally barely roll into the ring. So for her to have 12 matches and the quality of matches that she had, a physical feat that I had never seen before.
What kind of crowds were they? Was it fairly like big?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, them in.
That was I'm not sure if they still exist now, but it was huge for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Back in the early and late 90s, it was a phenomenon for you to be a to
what
try
year,
out.
Were you there then?
I was there in 2002.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it was tapering down, but they were still packing them in and drawing crowds and keeping the bills paid.
How long were you over there for?
About 6 years.
But I mean, straight or like how long?
Straight. I lived there.
You lived there?
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak Japanese?
Hi. Squishy like at them, you know. Nihongo muskashi desho. You know what's up.
Can you speak Japanese with a black girl attitude?
Ah. Wakanai ne. Wakanai ne. Shinai desho.
I know that. I know what that means. It's good that you speak Japanese because there's a lot of girls in AEW. The Kenny's girls are all Japanese and they don't speak a word of English. So
yes.
I had no idea that your background was so much in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's great. What did you think of it when you first went over there?
I thought it was wrong.
Wrong?
Yes.
How do you mean?
I thought everything was backwards. I'm having a nice meal and you're just going to strike up your cigarette while I'm having my nice meal.
Slurp them noodles right beside you.
Yeah. I
come on, dude. Are you serious?
I was like,
wait, any manners?
Yeah. I go backstage and people just filling on my breast going, natural.
They do that?
Yeah. It's like my first encounter. Someone just came and grabbed my breast and was like, natural?
You're like, damn straight.
I'm like, don't yes, 100% USDA. What is up with Japan? But then as I learned about the culture, I found that it wasn't wrong. It was different. Mm. And I left appreciating it so much. I had learned so much because, I mean, when I say I was this crass American with no manners, I was a crass American with no manners. I mean, you know how you leave the last piece of food or whatever and everybody asks, you know, whatever. I mean, I would just say, I'm like, that's me. It's good. Taking this last beat of me. Rude, no, Coos.
What she's talking about is it's the polite thing to do is always leave a piece on the table, and no one ever really wants to take it, but it's always the gaijin that does.
Yes.
The Japanese guys will never take the last piece.
Yes.
But it's like, well, I'm not going to let it go to waste.
And I got a look one time, and this look was like to kill, and I was like, oh, that was wrong.
Yeah.
I shall never do that again.
I learned very early on the bus calls at 10, and I would get there at 10, and I would get in trouble. I'm like, what is it? It's like, bus call is 10. If you get there on time, you're late. Right. You get there half an hour early, you're on time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just the little way that they do things there, because it's all based around respect, the way that
respect
they get
hospitality,
in business.
Respect and hospitality, yes.
So did you have an apartment in Tokyo?
The first 2-3 years, I lived in the dorms at the dojo.
Oh, wow.
I had my own room. And then I had an apartment, yes.
Did you have to do all the young boy, young girl stuff?
No, I was not required to, but I did anyway. If they were staying up to 1 o'clock, rolling up papers and whatnot and wiping down stuff, then I would stay up to 1 o'clock doing the same.
So what's, cause I know what the guys have to do in the dojo. What do the girls have to do?
Clean, of course. Mm-hmm. Wash the gear of, you know, all of our senpais. Roll up all those newspapers that we would put in the windows of all the cars so that they couldn't see who was driving in, if the heels or baby faces were driving in with one another.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So how would you have to leave a little space open so they can see out?
No, because like we would put these rolled up newspapers on the sides of the vans. And then when we got close, we would take the tape off and it would roll, drop down.
Oh, wow.
And then so you couldn't see into the van. And if you worried about seeing this way, then somebody would like just duck down.
Yeah, I got you.
But for the most part, yeah, you know,
really?
It's so kayfabe over there.
They wouldn't put drapes in the van?
No.
Roll up newspapers?
And we would have to sit there, roll up these newspapers and tape them.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
And everything. And just have these. And I would stay up and I would just sit in my room and have a whole bunch ready for them, and they would try to say, you know, no, go, whatever, and treat me as if I was a guy. I was like, no, I'm going to be a Kohai just like y'all, and I'm going to earn, my place here. And I did.
Did you ever have to make chanko?
No, I never had to make
chanko. So that's for the guys of just the soup, like with the meat, and a meat soup that all the guys eat in the dojo. So would the girls, what would you guys eat in the girls' dojo?
Sukiyaki for the most part.
Gotcha.
But because ours was set up a little bit differently, we didn't eat together that often.
Hmm.
And we had a kitchen. All Japan Women, their dojo had a restaurant in the middle.
Oh, I see.
The restaurant was closed down by that time I got there, but the kitchen was always available for you to go in and fix anything you want. But I already had, you know, I've been to college. I already know how to use my hot plate and my microwave in my room, so...
You know, it takes a special person to go over there. I don't know how old you were, but to go over to Japan and live there. I mean, you must really, really respect and love the wrestling business to do that.
Well, I had sacrificed so much. Right. I was 24 years old. I had a business that I gave up, and I had two jobs that I had given up that I had worked hard to get. I was making over six figures at 24 years old.
Wow. So, what were you doing?
I was a social worker at St. Anne's, and then I was a project coordinator for L.A. Shanti. That was like a community outreach program for the AIDS community. And then I had my own business, which was vending machines stationed all over Los Angeles.
Dude, that's a cash cow.
Right?
Yeah. I know some dudes that have that.
So I had it going on at 24, rolling in my little, you know, Mercedes, living in Hollywood and had it nice and taking care of my family and whatnot. My family thought I was insane.
Right, to do that, yeah.
To give all of that up, because initially it was only a two-week shot because my job wouldn't let me leave again. They let me leave for 2 weeks, and then I said, okay, well, now they want me to come back for another few weeks. And they said, no, you can go, but you can't come back.
Wow.
And I said, well, then... I'm not going to come back, because if I could build all this up once, I could do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I took the leap.
Because obviously it was your dream.
It was my dream. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do in like 2 weeks or 2 months when I come back here, because there was no guarantee that that was it.
Right.
It was like one big show that I was going to do and then come back. But I was like, fingers crossed.
Was there other foreigners there?
At the time, no. I was the only gaijin at All Japan Women.
Was there ever any other foreigners there during the whole course of time that you were there?
In my company?
Yeah.
Yes. Not to stay. I was the only one that lived there.
But I'm just wondering who else worked there.
Allison Danger.
Okay. I've heard of her before.
Sarah Del Rey came over. Natty Neidhart came over. A bunch of girls.
A bunch of girls, yeah.
Yeah, Sarah Stock, I believe, came over.
Because now the big company over there is Stardom. That's where they bring foreigners in, mm-hmm. Yeah. So what made you, so you said you went to TNA and worked there and built up that division that was huge, but then you mentioned that JR pulled for you to get into WWE. Now, mm-hmm. I can't remember, what year was that, 2000?
2010.
Yeah, because I wasn't there, because like I said, we don't know each other.
Yeah, 2009, 2010. He Stone Cold Steve Austin and Mick Foley lobbied to get me in.
How did Steve hear about you?
From the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Do tell.
We just met at the Cauliflower Alley Club. He was familiar with my work, and we got to rapping, and he's like, you know, that's someplace you need to go. Mm-hmm. And Mick Foley and I had been friends at TNA, and when I had left TNA, he called Vince McMahon himself and said, you need to hire this girl. And then JR lobbied on his social media.
Hmm. So tell us about how it all came about. How'd you finally get in there and the development of the Karma gimmick and all that sort of stuff?
I had to wait out my no-compete clause from TNA. And then
Did you leave there knowing that you were going to go to WWE, or were you just finished with TNA?
No. Oh, no. Child.
Child.
When I left TNA, when I insisted on leaving TNA, I had negative $76 in my bank account and my pride. That's all I had. And in fact, people at TNA assured me I would not be going to WWE. And I said, I still want to leave anyway.
Why did you want to leave?
Y'all, he don't know the story, y'all.
No, I don't know the story.
No, your listeners, they yelling it. You can't hear them. They yelling it to you right now, Lord. Okay, so... I had a disagreement.
Oh, was this the Bubba the Love Sponge thing?
You had to say the man name. Oh. But that's
we'll edit
that's
it out.
Not it wasn't really that. That was just where it
That was
just
straw that broke the camel's
back. Yeah, that was just stage left. Mm-hmm, you know. Things had been building up for a long time because things were like kind of just a mess over there. And I didn't understand why with what Gail and I were doing, the pay discrepancy was so large. Mm-hmm. And I felt that it was time that I actually earned a living wage. And so, you know, because in wrestling, you get a finite time to make yeah, your money.
Sure.
And I'm like, I'd like to make enough to at least have a 401k, you know,
mm-hmm,
to have a future. And so the struggle was just too hard. I came up against too much. And then the one thing that kept me there was it was the best locker room I'd ever experienced, you know. So when someone comes into the locker room and disrespects all the hardworking wrestlers and is speaking like a wrestler as if he earned the right to speak as such, that rubbed me the wrong way. My manager had just died like 48 hours before. I was doing a fundraiser for Haiti, the earthquake in Haiti. I hadn't slept in literally 48 hours. And so, you know, when you get to the point where it's like, you know what, F that.
Mm-hmm.
It got to that point. So we had a physical altercation. I was like, you know what, I'm done with everything. They wanted to turn into a storyline. I was like, I'm not turning into a storyline with that man. He's not
even a wrestler.
Right? I'm not putting that over at all. So I said, no, I want to leave. And they were like, you know, you think you're going to leave here and go over to WWE? They're not going to take you. They don't want you. And, you know, they were, you know how people tell you what Vince wants all the time? Vince doesn't like this. You ever experienced that? And so I'm like, well, whatever. I don't want to be here. You know what I mean? I'll sell oranges on the
freeway.
You
knew the time
was
right to go.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I'm done. Yeah. I wish you the best. I'm done. So they wanted to wait me out for 2 years. We negotiated 9 months. 9 months passed. I got a call from Tommy Dreamer. Hi, Tommy. and he said, can I give John Laurinaitis your number? And I thought he was joking.
I give John Laurinaitis your phone number?
Yeah, right? I was like, okay, yeah. And then so I get a call, and oh gosh, it was so horrible because I was actually sick. I was really, really sick. And I get a call from someone who says he's John Laurinaitis. And if you know John Laurinaitis' voice, I'm sick with a sore throat. And I'm like, I was, you know, call me.
He thinks you're taking the piss out of him.
You know what I mean?
Because Johnny talks like this.
I'm so sorry.
He talks like he has laryngitis.
I'm really sick. Please don't think I'm freaking making money. you know, he asked me my situation. I told him. And it kind of like just stayed in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2-3 months later, I was living with my now husband, but then boyfriend in Boston at the time. 2 or 3 months later, he asked me to come down to the Towers. And I do. We had a conversation, and he hired me there on the spot.
Wow. Now, talk about how they came up with Karma. Because I love, like, just I remember this now. There was vignettes, and it was kind of creepy and dark in your eyes and all that sort of stuff. And it's, I thought it's a great name. So what was the idea behind that?
I think they wanted to keep what I was already doing the same, just change the name. And, you know, freshen it up a little bit. So Triple H asked me, if you had a magic wand, what would you want to do? And I thought about it, and I submitted a bunch of names that I thought WWE would want me to have. And I mean, y'all, these names were embarrassing. It was like Barcissa Be Strange. Oh, no, what was it? Barcissa Be Wicked. I came up with like names that had like the initials BBW and stuff. Like, I mean, I'm talking about tacky and sticky. You know what I mean?
I just put that together, BBW.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what I was thinking. And then the one name that I like was wanted for like myself that I felt was kind of, you know,
intriguing,
the word.
Mysterious. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, Karma. And I just threw that in there. I was like, they're never going to want that. They're going to want me to be something freaking weird or whatever. And they came back and said, yeah, okay, Karma.
Just the merch from that, because Karma's a bitch.
Yeah, right?
Like, that would have been so great, right?
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the look was good, and and they just had you come out and just kill everybody. Because this was at the time where now, especially in the WWE, it's more of an athletic-based women that are in there, but this was the time when they have like a lot of models and bikini girls, and they all worked hard and they all learned, but they're all really pretty girls. And here comes Karma just killing them all. Mm-hmm. It was such a great, great contrast.
Nice.
Yeah. So what kind of did you get some input from Vince as to what he wanted you to do, or?
Not really. I think we were all on the same page as to do what I know, mm-hmm. you know, to stick with what I know.
But you were there for, how long were you there for?
Blinking, you missed
it. Very short time, right?
I was there for technically a little over a year.
Uh-huh.
But I was only on TV for that first time for about 2 months.
Yeah.
And didn't know that whole time that I was with child that whole time. Had no idea.
Really?
No clue.
Wow. That's pretty incredible.
Right?
It's like one of those ladies you see sometimes where like she didn't know she was pregnant and had a baby.
Right?
It's like, how did you not know if you were 9 months pregnant?
No idea.
Wow.
And so when we found out, then that's when I went on maternity leave.
Uh-huh.
And then came back for the Rumble.
Okay.
And then that was it.
And that was, why was that the end?
Well, you know, I lost my son.
Okay.
So that took an emotional toll.
Sure.
And they had asked me, you know, they wanted me to get into a certain kind of shape, which, you know, I agreed to do. But they asked me, how could they help? What they said, we'll give you anything you need to get back. And I let them know this is what I need. And then it was like, well, how about we just send you down to FCW? And I was like, I'm not really in an emotional, mental state to go down there and be amongst people right now. But that's what they insisted on doing. And I got there and I was like a zombie. I would just stand there watching people train and stuff. And then I actually asked if they would bring in Sarah Del Rey to help me get ready. And I guess they brought her in eventually, like literally 2-3 weeks after they let me go. I guess she was in the process of coming on but I got let go before she got there on an official capacity.
You know, we talked about this earlier about you becoming Kong, and if you had this emotional trauma of losing a baby and all this other stuff, I mean, it's probably hard to step into that role, which is probably why you were a zombie, like you said.
Well, it was postpartum depression.
Gotcha.
And it was like chemical. There was like nothing really I could do about it. It was like,
it's a real thing.
It's a real thing. It was just like, you literally, you know how great money is over there at WWE.
Yeah.
You literally could not pay me $1 million to get out of bed on some days.
Yeah.
Like, it just wasn't happening. And it was like, oh, well, I just have to wait it out. I don't know what else to do. I wish I could just. There was nothing it was out of my hands.
Yeah, yeah. When people say, you know, postpartum or depression or any kind of mental illness, it's not like you have a choice. Like you said, it's like you don't choose to have cancer or you don't choose to have postpartum depression. You just do.
You just do.
Right? How did you overcome it? Just time or?
Time and, you know, a good exercise regimen, good diet, and just time, really. I mean, I still have blue days. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's an experience you'll never, ever really get over. But at least I'm at the point where it's like, it's not at the forefront of my day every day. And it doesn't navigate my day.
Mm. You mentioned that you were in the Royal Rumble. Were you like, this is pre the women's Royal Rumble. Were you actually in the Royal Rumble with the guys?
Yes.
Oh, cool. See, I forgot.
Third woman ever.
All right.
First black woman. See, that's where the black, you know, comes in handy. It's like the first black woman.
What did you do in the Rumble?
Lord, that now that you can't hear them, they're telling me through the speaker what I did, all your listeners.
I know. I'm the worst for that. I'm like, I just let them tell me what happened.
I threw out, what's his name? He used to announce, Lord, help me.
Oh, Michael Cole?
I threw out Michael Cole, and I eliminated someone else, a luchador. Lord, help me.
Oh, okay. A luchador.
A luchador.
Sin Cara or something like that.
Yes, and then I tangled with, Lord have mercy.
With that guy.
That guy. But he's like one of my favorite workers ever, and I tell all the glow girls to like watch all his stuff.
What does he look like?
Blonde. Starts with a D. Blonde.
Dolph Ziggler.
Dolph Ziggler. There you go. I'm sorry, Dolph. You know I love you, and you could ask all the Glow girls. All I do is talk about you all day long.
You know, I was just remembering this as we talk, because I was about to come back at the time when you were about to debut, and I remember seeing your vignettes, and they weren't similar to mine, but it was kind of the same idea. I'm like, what are they doing? They're playing, who's Karma? What is this Karma person? And why are they doing the same vignettes of a secret person that's going to arrive? What's going on?
I didn't write it.
So were you out of wrestling for a while then after that? Or is that
when? Yes.
Yeah.
And I thought I was actually done
mm-hmm.
with wrestling. But then I went back to TNA for a little stint. Then I left there. And about 4 or 5 months later, Glow.
Just came, one thing led to another. Like you said, all of these things happen, all very serendipitous, right?
Ah, serendipitous.
That's the other one we could have used. That's the other one we could have used.
Yes, and because God is good all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, as we wind down here, it's really cool. Like
are
I said,
down?
Oh, we can keep going. It's great. I mean, we've been talking for almost an hour.
Oh, you didn't even
go by fast,
felt
right?
Like 15 minutes.
Yeah, see, because we're good. We're good. So what do you plan on doing with AEW? Because it seems like I was laughing because it's like we've got Awesome Kong and Aja Kong, and it seems like obviously that's the match. Have you guys ever worked before?
Yes. She kicked my butt once back in like 2005, and then right after that, we started tagging together.
Oh, yeah. The Kongs.
Mm-hmm. Double Kong, yep.
So there's a lot of potentials of things that you guys can do for AEW as well.
Oh, for sure.
Because it seems like they've signed quite a few women already.
Yes. However, I aim to be not just talent, but to work in a backstage. Mm. I'm in the point of my career where it's time to transition backstage and pass on the things I've learned over the years to this new generation. Make some new stars.
But that's the thing too, though, when you're a certain size and taking bumps, it gets harder and harder as you get older.
That's true too.
Right?
However, I still think I'm still young and can get spry when I want to. But I think now is the time to try to transition to a backstage to have some backstage influence as well. You know, put my feet in both worlds.
It's so great, and that's another reason why it's amazing that AEW exists, and who would have thought, you know, a year ago that we'd have, you know, a legitimate competition, if that's the word you want to use. I like to use alternative for the WWE, but it gives everybody a whole new lease and everybody a chance to, like you said, to continue on the tradition of showing new people the experience that you know. Had there been no AEW, you might not have a chance to do that.
That's for damn sure. I mean, I'm always getting that question on my social media. When are you going to go back? When are you going to come back? And I'm like, y'all, when they ask me, why don't you ask them when I'm coming back? So now I don't have to deal with that question anymore, because now we have this avenue to cultivate and to see a different point of view for a change.
You know, it's funny to me because it's the typical thing. They did the same thing to Batista. Like he's in Guardians of the Galaxy, biggest movie in the world.
Mm.
They don't bring him back. You know, you're in Glow, the biggest show on TV. They're not calling you. Like, I just think it's so obvious for at least a one-off or something, you know?
Right? I don't know. I guess they mad. They said, how dare you get pregnant after we spend all that money on your debut? She gonna go get knocked up after we spend all that money on her debut.
The audacity that you showed, yeah, in getting pregnant. How dare you, damn it.
Right? If she had a DUI, we could forgive
that
bitch got pregnant.
What do you think of the roster at AEW? Who are you looking forward to working with? Do you know any of the girls?
Yes, I've been familiarizing myself with them. And, you know, Britt Baker shows lots of promise. And but I have to say, I do plan on passing down some knowledge to one person in particular. I won't say who, because I plan on tangling with her first.
Mm.
And she know who she is. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, we'll have to, I'll throw some darts at the board and see if I can figure it out. No, it's exciting for me. And will there be more glow for you? Do we know this yet?
Oh gosh, I don't know. We usually don't find out if there's more glow until about 60 days after the season comes on. So
that's probably how they can judge how the viewership was and the ratings and all that sort of stuff.
I know, but it seems like this particular season left on a note. They left it like wide open. Mm-hmm. On past seasons, they left it kind of like, oh, it could end. And if it did end like this, then that's okay. But this one, they left it in a way it was like, well, they kind of have to come back now.
Have to continue. I'm sure they kind of know.
I would hope so. I would hope that they would share it with us.
So when I asked you to do this, you just said, I got a really crazy, bizarre request. Can you guarantee me there won't be clowns walking around the studio? And, you know, typical wrestling, I didn't even ask any questions. I said, no, I can guarantee there'll be no clowns walking around in the studio. Can you fill me in on what the deal was with that?
Okay. Well, one, I'm proud of myself that I got like 30 some my years while having to bring this up. But I knew this day would come. So I did a podcast for my friend Monday night with Jahan Sabir. Uh-huh. And we're about to wrap up and everything. Now, it was in the basement of the Comedy Store.
Okay.
So already I'm feeling a little bit claustrophobic because their setup, the room is rather small. Mm-hmm. And it's got the soundproof, like, foam on the walls, so no one can hear me scream if I need to. Mm-hmm. And we're talking, and we're in the whole podcast is about, you know, F that moment, and we're giving our F that moments. And I look up, and in the window, you know, for those of you listening, most sound booths and studios, the door has, like, a little window. And mm-hmm. even Jericho has one. He has a little window here. I look up, and there's fucking Pennywise from It staring at me. I have an aversion to clowns. I have colorphobia.
What's it called?
Yes, colorphobia.
Okay.
And I have a serious case of it to where I have an involuntary reaction.
You're terrified of clowns.
The clowns. Yeah. I could barely even talk about them. So when I saw him, I thought he was coming to kill me. I thought it was the clown. Assassin, that he was finally here, because I knew he's coming. Mm-hmm. I've been waiting for him for like, you know, you ever see, what's the, Jeepers Creepers?
Yeah.
Did he come every like 20-something years?
Yeah.
I've been waiting for this damn clown for 20-something years. I'm like, damn, he didn't caught me where I can't run. Ain't nobody gonna hear me scream. Nothing like that. And I tore up their whole, imagine me tearing up all this nice equipment.
Oh, here, you smashed it up.
Throwing it at the clown because I thought he was, and then I had nowhere to go, so I took my friend, I'm sorry, John, it's your fault, took my friend's body and I threw it on top of mine. It just lay there and rebuking this clown, you know, I rebuke you in the name of the Lord. I mean, this has only happened to me like 3 times in my life. Last time that it happened to me was at TNA. Mm-hmm. I was sitting there talking to Mick Foley. And you know Mick Foley has, you know he has a bad back, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And you know in wrestling, it's all about like respect. Mm-hmm. We respect people, and especially people that's been in wrestling longer than us. But I tell you, I swear to God, that I climbed over Mick Foley and his bad back. Mm-hmm. And I left footprints on in his crotch and whatnot, and literally crawled into a high voltage area that it's where all the pyro is for the ramp. Yeah. I climbed under the ramp with all the high voltage stuff because a clown walked onto the TNA set and no one told me that there was going to be a clown there that day. So poor Mick Foley in his back had a 300-pound woman just like hop over it.
Wow.
And to the deal. And the time before that, I was, you know, I'm not proud of this, but I was trick-or-treating. I took my niece trick-or-treating. I was about 21 years old. This is before I was calm. And my sister had just had a baby, so she was following us in her car. And so I had my niece, Jessica. She was about 2.5, 3 years old at the time, and we were trick-or-treating in Harbor City. And we came up to a house, and it had killer clowns from outer space.
Oh, wow.
So I left the baby in the middle of the street, and I just ran away to the Kmart because of clowns.
Yeah.
Now, I grew up in L.A., South Central. I have been in active shooter situations. I've been in drive-bys where I've had to duck from bullets. I've been in bar fights. I have never been as scared in a situation as when a clown comes up to me. I have shielded kids, like, you know, pop me, you know, when it starts popping out. I'm like, growing up, you know, we would go to a party and we knew, you know, oh, they're going to start shooting around 2 o'clock. So, you know, we might have to leave, and then they'll start shooting and you just got to duck. You know, I got good at not even spilling my drink once I got to ducking, you know.
Yeah.
And you just, you stay calm and you duck and you wait till the shooting is over and you get up, you know.
Wow.
But what do you do when a clown walk in the room?
Yeah.
You know, and why would you expect a clown to be at a comedy store? I mean, I know people think clowns are funny, but they ain't funny to me. So I wouldn't expect a clown to be at the place of laughter.
Right. Sure, sure, sure.
And happiness.
Right.
So my friend, you know, she actually tapes her podcast. And the thing is, I couldn't ask her. She was like, this is the most exciting thing that's ever happened on my show. And I would do anything for anybody. So I couldn't, like, exactly ask her to please erase it, you know. You know, I'll, you know, that's my friend, so she can. So, like, in a week or two, you're gonna see me try to murder a clown.
Well, like I said,
podcast.
I promise there'll be no clowns here,
and there wasn't,
and there wasn't. So, I promise anytime you're around and I'm around, if there's any clowns, I will tell them to stay the hell away from you.
No, but seriously, I just want to say, since you know, you have a platform, we're talking about this. Please don't think it would be funny to come up to me dressed as a clown and you would think it's funny. It would be dangerous to your health. And I'm not saying that in a ha-ha way. You would provoke something and it'd be your fault. Okay.
There you go. Okay, last two questions. Last question is a two-parter.
A,
what's your favorite episode of Glow for you, or favorite scene that you had? And B, what's your favorite match that you ever had?
Oh, gosh. You're throwing some, like,
yeah,
freaking deep Sophie Choice over here. I'd have to say I loved in season 2, episode 8, because they show the show within the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I wish they had did just, like, 2-3 more, like,
when you were filming the show, like in the warehouse, and when it finally comes on, you mean, like when they're filming the show?
Yeah, it was
the actual Glow show.
Yeah, yeah. They had a whole episode where it was the actual show within the show.
That was cool.
And I was like, oh gosh, I love that. I wanted like 2-3 more episodes just like that, just to watch, just for my own deal. My favorite match, I'd have to say, was the first time I had ever faced my hero, a hero of mine, in the ring. And it was when I faced the Dudley Boys. Aja and I, we had wrestled. We used to be part of this promotion called Hustle. And they used us as characters that were polar opposites of our usual gimmick. So we were in tutus. Imagine Aja and I in tutus, okay? Like ballerinas and stuff. And they put us against Team 3D, the Dudley Boys.
Really?
Yeah.
This is in Japan?
This is in Japan.
No kidding.
And so when they came down, you know, when their entrance hit, because, you know, Aja and I are already in the ring, I'm just in the ring like, I have the best fucking seat in the house. Oh, my God.
That's cool.
Get better than that.
How'd you like over in the Bubba? Did you guys beat the shit out of each other?
Yeah, we tangled. And then I got to take the what's up and everything. I was like, oh, my God.
But it doesn't hurt you. Because you don't have balls.
I don't have the balls.
How do you feel about intergender matches? That's kind of the big rage.
I feel if you know how to tell a story that doesn't hurt, that doesn't leave the male looking like a wimp, or doesn't glorify beating on women, if you know how to tell this story right, then I'm all for it. I actually had a match in the Midwest, or at least I was billed on a match in the Midwest. And the guy, this is kind of in the beginning of my TNA tenure. And the guy didn't want to job to me. So he didn't even show up. And so it was, and it was for the, like, the NWA title and everything. And it was like, well, what the heck? And so this kid volunteered. He was like, I'll do it. I'll job to her. And he helped me put together this match. And we went out there, and he while he put me over, he got over as well. And his name was Tyler Black. You might know him as Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
You know? So, and he went to WWE like within the year of that. So it didn't hurt him at all. And we had, and it was one heck of a match, you know? So it, depending on how you tell the story, if you stay within the rules of, you know, don't knock a woman in the mouth and don't make a man look like a wimp, I think I'm for him.
My first angle in the WWE was with China.
Oh, yes. Are you kidding me? I was there at the Arrowhead Palm when y'all was doing
that. Oh, yeah?
Yes, I was. Lord, child. Yes, I was.
Oh, man. Well, it's good talking to you. I'm glad we finally get a chance to meet each other after all these years. And arigato gozaimasu.
Thank you very
give
much.
Give us a little Japanese. Give us a little Japanese to close
Domo.
It up.
Domo. Minasama. Kia desu. Amazing Kong desu. Minasan, otsukare sama deshita. Jane.
Which she said.
All right, good news, Glow fans. Since I recorded this with Kia earlier this summer, Glow has definitely been renewed for season 4. It is the final season, but Kia and the Welfare Queen and all the ladies will be back on Netflix sometimes next summer. All right, coming up sometime on Friday, comedian Ryan Niemiller. He did a really great sketch together with him. We did a great sketch together on America's Got Talent a few months ago. Cripple Threat actually came in third on that season on the show. We're going to talk about the sketch, his experience at AGT, the deformities he has in his arm, and how he's used that to become one of the top up-and-coming comedians in America today. So we will see you then. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy, and stay away from those clowns. Send in the clowns. And also, too, one more thing. Don't forget to come see Fozzy if you're in San Antonio. It is the 8th anniversary listener bash of the Billy Madison Show in San Antonio. We're going to have a great time. It's going to be rocking. So go check that out at FozzyRock.com for all ticket information. We'll see you on Friday in San Antonio. And we'll see you on Friday right here on Talk Is Jericho for Cripple Threat. Oh, yeah.
Send in the clowns.